We're entering the summer driving season, and it's election year, so it's about as predictable as the phases of the moon that someone in Washington is going to try to take credit for an attempt to lower your gasoline prices. And that's what we saw yesterday as the Biden administration announced it's going to release 1 million barrels of gasoline. Time to help you get some relief from the high price of gasoline, which is about 6 cents above what it was last year at this time. Watching all of this with a very practiced eye is Paul Sankey, lead oil and gas analyst for Sankey Research. Paul, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. So we've got this gasoline reserve in the Northeast. It was going to shut down anyway under congressional mandate. So is this like trying to take credit for the sun rising, or and will this have an effect?
Well, I mean, I think the overall picture is that you've politicized the loss of what should be administration, literally not political decisions. And so handing out the emergency reserve at a time when there's no emergency, and as you say, it's entirely related to the it's openly related to the election, is just part of a bad pattern that, frankly, both sides of the House are practicing, whether they're in power. You know, we tend to see very politicized decisions from the Fair Trade Commission, from the Environmental Protection Agency, and here from the oil management people. So it's unfortunate, and we don't support it.
So, Paul, you got some critics who argue that the Northeast Reserve is just too small to really affect gas prices. And they question the effectiveness of it. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, U.S. gasoline demand is, you know, eight plus million barrels a day, to give you an idea, a day. So, you know, a 1 million release tends to just mess up the local market in which you're releasing it. And as you know, this is in the Northeast, which is a product short market. So they have a lot less refineries than they do oil demand and gasoline demand. So you're pumping, you're distorting the market essentially by doing this, but it will serve to lower gasoline prices. By the way, gasoline prices are already under pressure. Demand is looking weak going into summer globally, and there really is no emergency whatsoever.
Why was the U.S. one of the only countries to have a gasoline reserve when there are so many issues with it? You know, gas having a shelf life, et cetera.
It's because of the specifics of the Northeast, which is very dependent on pipelines from the Gulf Coast. So the big refining capacity is on the Gulf Coast. One of the other dumb things about U.S. energy systems is that you have the Jones Act, which means you can only transport oil on a U.S.-built, U.S.-flagged, U.S.-manned tanker. And there's not as many of those as you would want. So there's not a tremendous trade by sea of products, and therefore you have an emergency reserve in the Northeast, which is somewhat unnecessary, as I say, because essentially there's abundant supply. It really is for hurricanes, you know, for major hurricane events that knock out refineries.
So there will be this shutdown. In the meantime, they're going to parse out this 1 million barrels of gasoline in 100,000 barrel increments. When you look at that, and when you consider that's basically 2.5 hours worth of consumption, how many pennies will it move the needle, even in the Northeast? And will we see any impact here in the Midwest, Paul?
You won't see a lot, no. You won't, because you're not connected to the Northeast. So essentially, your market's quite different. And it all adds up to a lower price, but the price is already fairly low, as you've noted. And the main thing that's going on here, actually, is Americans are just driving more efficient cars. You know, they may still be driving SUVs, but the SUVs are far more efficient than the old SUVs, the 15-year-old SUV that they scrapped.
Right.
So essentially, there's no need for any of this.
So if you were to compare the price for before the pandemic, Memorial Day 2019 to now, we're up about 80 cents, aren't we?
Yeah, but we lost basically the largest European stroke global oil supply of, you know, there's three major suppliers, Saudi, Russia, and the U.S. And we looked effectively in between, we lost one of them. So it's hardly surprising, especially with the attacks on Russian refining that are going on through Ukrainian drones. It's hardly surprising that we're somewhat higher. And generally, as you know, U.S. gasoline prices are low by global standards. it's more of a sticker shock that Americans feel when gasoline prices go up. It's not as onerous on their pocketbooks, anything like, as the $10 a gallon that you pay in Europe.
I have a question for you just generally. When people say, thanks, Biden, for these gas prices, how much influence does a U.S. president have on gas prices?
Well, I mean, he canceled the Keystones, the first thing he did. So that was negative that made oil prices higher. But since then, there's an awful lot, generally speaking, in Washington, because the oil states are not very marginal states. You know, Texas is pretty guaranteed red, although, of course, that's changing. Politically, oil is just a good victim, you know, to beat up as a, you know, to blame for everything that's wrong in the world. When in fact, as I think as you're implying, the president doesn't make a whole load of difference. When they examine how much subsidy the oil industry gets, they fail to find it. When they look for gouging, time and time again, year and year again, they don't find gouging. And generally speaking, this industry has just been hugely positive for the U.S. economy because of the amount of oil and gas supply growth that's been generated. And we've gone to be the biggest supplier of oil and natural gas exports. And, you know, they should be getting applause from Washington. And Washington should stop spending so much money. That's not what we get, unfortunately. But the bottom line is, no, the president doesn't make a whole lot of difference. The oil industry just carries on pretty much with what it was doing previously, because there isn't that much distortion in what they do. You know, there isn't that much subsidy. There is no gouging. The stuff that they accuse them of essentially is untrue.
Paul, since this is an election year and this really seems political, do we expect another release for Labor Day?
Well, that'll be the end of driving season, and it really depends on whether gasoline prices suddenly start going up, and I don't really see that. I mean, the tightest that we get in gasoline is in the preparation for summer, so it should be around now that prices hit peak, because obviously you've got to get the gasoline supplied to the stations for ready for when everybody starts driving. So typically while demand rises through summer, you'll see prices about as high as they'll get at the beginning of summer. So I doubt that in the current environment, all things equal, we would see another relief. And this relief, by the way, surprised me. I thought it was pretty desperate move to gain votes, like canceling student debt and stuff. It's a pretty obvious move.
Mm-hmm. Which he did again today. I think $7 billion worth of student aid was canceled earlier. By the way, you looked at it from the demand side. You said the demand is kind of weak heading into the summer driving season. How are we doing with supply? Are we back above the pre-pandemic crude production domestically?
Yeah, we are. So that dipped lower, as you can imagine, during COVID.
But so even with all the things Biden has done that's anti-fossil fuel, we're still back above where we were.
Yeah, and by the way, the natural gas price in Texas in the Permian has been negative. And that's how much natural gas there is. And the problem with that is that the environmentalists won't let you build gas pipelines, which makes no sense. I mean, if you're using gas pipelines to substitute coal or exporting LNG to substitute coal, is hugely positive for the environment. But unfortunately, they oppose everything everywhere, and gas pipelines becomes part of, you know, the fossil fuel construct, which they oppose. So it doesn't make any sense. So we have so much natural gas, we literally have to pay people to take it away right now.
Yeah, well, we know about it here. We're going to be going up to the Straits of Mackinac, where they're stopping a tunnel that would safely bring hydrocarbons to market. Apparently, it's not safe enough when it's below the lake bed. You know, it's the Line 5 debacle. We appreciate your time and your analysis, Paul, and we'll wait for that fraction of a penny relief.
But not here.
That's coming to the Northeast. Thank you so much, and have a great day, Paul.
Thanks, you guys.
Just ahead, a wonderful move forward in an effort to help the homeless here in Metro Detroit. We'll tell you how it's being done and the Good Samaritans behind it. Next on JR Morning at 6:49. Time now for S&P Global Mobility Minute with Mike Wall. It's brought to you by Dana. Dana, people finding a better way.
The global light vehicle production environment remains on a fairly steady footing. The past few months have been marked by modest upward revisions in the very near term, and that trend continues with the May 2024 update. While elevated vehicle prices, higher for longer interest rates, and somewhat slowing economic growth rates represent headwinds, the outlook for vehicle demand remains generally constructive. Notwithstanding the noteworthy top-line production stability, propulsion mix developments continue to vary by region, as some markets face slower EV adoption growth rates while other areas continue to see rather encouraging results. Turning to North America, S&P Global Mobility's latest light vehicle production outlook remains stable at 16 million units for 2024, relative to 15.7 million units for 2023, to maintain ideal inventory levels as U.S. light vehicle sales are expected to increase 2.6% to just under 16 million units. I'm Mike Wall with this week's Automotive Minute from S&P Global Mobility, formerly IHS Markit.